बंदे रूप सनातन रघुजग श्री जीव गोपाल को।
When Dhruva Maharaj heard of the killing of his brother Uttama by the Yakshas in the Himalaya mountains, being overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, he got on his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the Yakshas, Alkapuri.
So, the third verse describes the death of Uttama, and the fourth and fifth verse describes the response of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva heard about this and he was overwhelmed with lamentation and anger. So anger and lamentation are manifesting in a pure devotee because of death of a relative. So he went to Alakapuri on his chariot to fight with the Yakshas. So how can a devotee manifest anger? Yes, he can. So Dhruva Maharaj, his anger and his grief and becoming angry with the enemies was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. Because as a dutiful king, he is supposed to punish people who unceremoniously kill his brother. So from that perspective, Dhruva Maharaj being angry as a kshatriya, as a king, as a protector, as a ruler, is not proper, is not wrong, right? And as an affectionate brother, he can always become angry. So, in general, when great devotees lament, it is not simply due to some bodily attachment. It is connected with Krishna. When a devotee passes away, another devotee or other devotees and the entire devotee community might feel bad, might cry, might lament, will miss him because of their affectionate feelings towards that devotee. Definitely, philosophically, they understand that soul is eternal. Soul is a part and parcel of Krishna. This devotee must have received a better destination by the grace of Krishna. They offer prayers and chant for him for his better destination. At the same time, they will also miss him. They will also miss the association of such a devotee. So Krishna told Arjuna, Ashochyan anvasochastvam prajna vadamsya bhashasi gatasun agatasamsya nano sochanti panditaha. So men are not supposed to lament for the living or the dead. And they have to tolerate also. Matras parshastu kaunteya sitoshna sukhadukkadaha apama apayino anitya tam sitikshasva bharata. Like that, Krishna gave so many teachings to Arjuna in the beginning of the battlefield. Arjuna heard them, digested them and began the battle. But when his son Abhimanyu died, Arjuna was lamenting in grief so much. Right? So, although he is a self-realized devotee, personal friend of Krishna, why he is lamenting and why he is angry? When Abhimanyu was killed, he was trembling, he was crying. He took a vow, I will kill that fellow Jayadratha. And if I can't kill him by tomorrow, I'll enter fire also. Like that he took. So, it is natural. It is natural. Devotees do not become stone-hearted, they become soft-hearted. Right? When their near and dear ones are leaving, definitely they'll feel bad. There is lamentation, there is anger. Right? So, upon death, lamentation is natural. But, in that lamentation, one should not give up one's service. Arjuna was lamenting when Krishna disappeared. Yasya kshanaviyogena loko hya priya darshanaha ukthena rahito hyesha mrtakah prochyate yatha. Just a moment of separation from my beloved Krishna would render all universes into void, and they appear like dead bodies devoid of life. So to that extent he is feeling separation. At the same time he lamented for some time, and later he could reconcile the situation based on the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, and he prepared for the next event, that is their own departure. So all the Pandavas together decided to enthrone Parikshit Maharaj as the king, and they planned for their retirement. Right. So lamentation for one's near and dear ones is natural, even in the case of a pure devotee. But pure devotee doesn't lament on a material platform. His lamentation is also centered on Krishna, and he doesn't give up his service, the next duties, right, because of that lamentation. So that is the perception of death for a materialist and a devotee. Great devotees also sometimes may have to respond to certain physical urges, nature calls. They have to eat, they have to bathe, they have to evacuate, and they have to feel some disease or pain or pleasure, etc. They are all conventions of the world. So like that conventions only, another convention is crying when a relative passes away. That way. But one should not lose intelligence at that time. So you just miss that person and you express that grief, but one should not become so mad, understanding that soul is eternal. So Kshatriya anger is very important. Kshatriya is supposed to be angry when there is a need, but that is controlled anger. It is not anger that is simply based on ego when our desires are frustrated. It is a tool to be used in the service of the Lord. So when someone does something objectionable, a kshatriya, a ruler, a king is supposed to punish him, and to punish one has to exhibit some anger. No, one cannot with a broad smile just slap him and then kill him. But there is some anger also that is supposed to be manifested. So to that extent it is justified. However, towards the end of the chapter, in the beginning of the chapter, what Dhruva Maharaj was feeling was justified. But towards the end of the chapter, his anger became undue. That was not justified. But we will see as the story passes. Fifth verse. Someone can read.
Dhruva Maharaj went to the northern direction of the Himalayan range. In a valley, he saw a city full of ghostly persons who were followers of Lord Shiva.
So, Himalayan valley, Alakapuri, that's called Alakapuri. So, these Yakshas are devotees of Shiva. They were Himalayan tribes like the Tibetans, Prabhupada writes. So, Dhruva was outraged at his brother's death. And for one Yaksha's crime, he is about to kill the entire Yaksha's race. So Dhruva's grief and anger drove him to ferocity. He vowed to revenge against Yakshas and went to Himalayas. So Dhruva's anger is justified, but the intensity of his anger is too much. Right? So after all, the Lord has predicted Uttama's death. It is Lord's prediction that Uttama will die like this and Suruchi will die like that. So what has already been ordained by the Lord, why he has to become so angry now? Right? Because Dhruva Maharaj also wanted to demonstrate to the world that I have no more inimical feelings towards my brother Uttama. Uttama died and Dhruva is indifferent. The Lord anyways predicted. Anyways, everybody has to die at one point. So I need not react so much. If he is so detached like that, people might think that, oh, he may be still holding some envious feelings or jealous feelings towards Uttama, like he was feeling in his childhood. To prove that he is affectionate towards his brother, to prove that he still loves his brother, despite whatever bitter interactions they might have had in the childhood before he went to tapasya. So to prove that, he did like this. So later in the next chapter, Manu will come and say, yes, now you should relax. It has been proved that you love your brother. You don't have any more inimical feelings towards your brother. Right? To prove your affection towards your brother, you don't have to kill so many yakshas. Please stop. Like that. So it's very ironically like inconceivable, this whole episode, that at one point Drona Maharaj saw Uttama as an object of his anger and jealousy and revenge. That he was sitting on a place where I desire to sit. But at one point he became the object of his affection. What's the difference? Bhakti. Bhakti converted that revengeful attitude towards Uttama into an affectionate attitude. Right? So, bhakti softens the hearts of people. That doesn't make one's heart hard. Right? Sixth verse, someone can read.
Mantra continue. My dear Vidur, as soon as Dhruva Maharaj reached Alkapuri, he immediately blew his conch shell, and the sound reverberated throughout the entire sky and in every direction. The wives of Yakshas became very much frightened. Mm. From their eyes, it was apparent that they were full of anxiety.
Mm. So perhaps Dhruva would have himself seemed vengeful towards Uttama if he had not avenged the death of Uttama. So, like this. Right? So for that he had to go and then declare a war. So he blew conch shell. So it's like conch shell before Aarti. So when before Aarti, if you blow conch shell, at the max the whole temple hall might hear or the whole campus might hear. But when Dhruva Maharaj blew his conch shell, it went so many miles and the entire Alakapuri was hearing that. Right? You can only understand how loud must be the sound. Right? They understood that this sound is not Aarti sound. It is it is definitely the sound of war, declaring war. So everybody became very alarmed. Seventh verse.
Oh Hero Vidur, the greatly powerful heroes of Yakshas, unable to tolerate resounding vibration of the conch shell of Dhruva Maharaj, came forth from their city with weapons and attacked Dhruva.
Hmm. So, they are also very powerful, Yakshas. So, if someone is coming and challenging them for a war, why will they keep silent? They will also come out, right, to challenge him. They came out with weapons to attack Dhruva. Eighth verse.
Dhruva Maharaj, who was great charioteer and certainly a great bowman also, immediately began to kill them simultaneously, discharging arrows three at a time.
Mm. So Dhruva Maharaj is a Maharathi, great charioteer and bowman. So he was releasing three arrows at a time. So ninth verse. Yakshas understood their awkward position. Are one person here? He did not take a full army or so many ministers and soldiers and assistant rathis, atharathis, maharathis, all that he didn't take. He went alone. So they understood their awkward position. So they concluded that they would be defeated. Yet they praised Dhruva Maharaj. Wow, he has such great strength, such military skills he has. He is releasing three arrows at a time. So the spirit of fighting is generally in a sporting attitude in the case of Kshatriyas. So when Kshatriyas come on the battlefield to fight with each other, definitely they fight to kill each other. But when the opponent is displaying some special skill, so they appreciate.
Mm.
Right? So they appreciate and they are pleased with the wonderful heroic acts of Dhruva Maharaj. So this straightforward appreciation of an enemy's prowess is a characteristic of real Kshatriya spirit. 10th verse. Read.
Just like serpents who cannot tolerate being trampled upon by anyone's feet, the Yakshas, being intolerant of the wonderful prowess of Dhruva Maharaj, threw twice as many arrows, six from each of their soldiers, and thus they very valiantly executed their prowess.
So you are throwing three arrows at a time, we'll throw six arrows. So six arrows are coming towards Dhruva. And how many people are there? The 11th and 12th verses say that there were 1,30,000 Yaksha soldiers are there. All were angry. They were showering weapons on Dhruva Maharaj, arrows on Dhruva Maharaj, six at a time. So 6 into 130,000. So 7,80,000 arrows were coming on Dhruva every few seconds. how much time it may take to release an arrow? Half minute maximum. So every half minute, 780,000 arrows were coming upon Dhruva. And one person, he is able to handle all of that. Right? So, 13th verse. From 13th verse onwards, so many analogies were described. Analogies were given to describe the fight. So when this 780,000 arrows were coming upon Dhruva every few seconds, Dhruva Maharaj was covered like a mountain. In this case, 13th verse says, Dhruva Maharaj was compared to a mountain. And all these weapons were like rainfall. In a mountain, when there is rain on the mountain, it's like so many raindrops are coming upon the mountain. Similarly, millions of, thousands of arrows were coming upon Dhruva. So he looked as if there is a rainfall on the mountain. However, there is significance in this kind of comparison. So most of these comparisons are glorifying Dhruva only. Although he appeared like mountain covered by rains, what will happen? When rain comes, there is no maha cleaning in the mountain. Right? No, a team of people will not go and then take their scrubbers and whatever, jhadu pocha, and then clean the mountain. When rain comes, mountain is cleaned. So similarly, with this rain of arrows, with the rain, dirty things are washed away from a mountain. Similarly, with this rain of arrows, whatever incompetence Dhruva might be having, that is washed away. His vigor was renewed. So when the opponent is very strong, a kshatriya gets extra enthusiasm to fight with him. Right? So that is the significance of this comparison. 14th verse. When Dhruva was covered by these arrows, so many arrows, 780,000 arrows, the Siddhas cried as Dhruva appeared to merge amongst the Yakshas. So Dhruva appeared like a sun who is setting now. As the sun sets into the ocean, Dhruva Maharaj is setting in this ocean of Yakshas. He is becoming invisible. Thousands of people, 130,000 people are surrounding him, fighting with him. And 780,000 arrows are coming upon him every few minutes, every few seconds. And Dhruva is like going into the ocean of Yakshas. Although sun seems to be drowning in the ocean, sun is not harmed. Right? It's not that sun is drowning in the ocean and there is the end of the sun. That doesn't happen. So this analogy is also very significant. Although Dhruva is seemingly drowning in the ocean of the arrows and amongst the Yakshas, Dhruva had no difficulty. He can come out. Just like sun will rise, sun may go into the ocean, seemingly at the sun, at the time of sunset, again sun will rise also. Similarly, Dhruva also will rise. So, Manava means descendant of Manu. In this verse, Dhruva is described as Manava. So, one who follows laws given by Manu is called a Manava. So, Manava, man can also mean woman also here. So, man means basically human. Anyone who is a descendant of Manu is like a human being. So, Dhruva Maharaj is a distinguished Manava because he is a great devotee. Amongst the Manavas, amongst the human beings, someone who is a devotee is very special. So, Dhruva is a distinguished Manava. And Siddhaloka Vasis can fly in the sky without airplanes. So they were able to see the whole fight here. And they were very anxious about Dhruva's welfare. Rupa Goswami says, not only is the devotee well protected by the Supreme Lord, but all the demigods and even ordinary men also become anxious for his security and safety. So when Dhruva is fighting, why Siddhas are becoming anxious? Because he is a pure devotee. Everybody becomes concerned about the devotee. So, if the fight is one-sided, there is not much excitement. Right? So, Krishna and his devotees make the pastimes very interesting and exciting. And sometimes they appear to be lost in the battles. For example, when Krishna is fighting with Kaliya, for about a muhurta time, Kaliya bound Krishna in his coils. And all the people were very anxious. All the Vrajavasis who were standing on the banks, they were anxious. So, So Krishna could have released himself in 48 seconds. or 0.48 seconds also. But Krishna did not release because he was tasting the feelings, anxious feelings of all the Vrajavasis. In that anxious moments, their love for Krishna increased manifold, and Krishna is tasting that. At one point he realized that if I don't release myself now, they may even die. So he just released himself from the coils of Kalya and then subdued Kalya. And similarly, when he was fighting with Kovalaya Pida, so many times he would just hit Kovalaya Pida and hide between his legs. And he's a little small boy, 10-year-old boy. He was just playing between the pillars. So Kovalaya Pida is so huge. His legs are like that pillars. So now the small boys will just go between the pillars like this. Krishna is just going like that. Right. Sometimes apparently he exhibits fear and then runs away from Kovalaya Pida. And Kovalaya Pida was encouraged to fight. Oh, he's running away from me. So let me just run and then catch him and then kill him like that. So Krishna will encourage all the demons to fight. Otherwise, like one slab and the demon died and there is no fight only. There is no maja only. Like that. So once we had a drama, Ramayan drama. So one of our devotees was playing the role of Jatayu, another devotee was Raman. So Sita was Jaisan Chinandan Prabhu. You know Jaisan Chinandan Prabhu. Right? So Raman took Sita and then they were going, and Jatayu came to protect. And Ravan did love you and Jatayu fell down. Jatayu was lying there, background music was going for next 3-4 minutes, and then on the stage, the Jatayu was lying, and then Ravan didn't know what to do now. He just took Sita and went away, and music was going on till the next scene. Music is like pre-planned. Till the music file gets completed, next scene will not come. So once lover, Garuda Prabhu was playing the role of Jatayu. Like that. And costumes were so elaborate, but fight was hardly for half a moment. Like that. So here, Dhruva was compared like a, compared to sun who is setting here. So Maya is like cloud or fog. Maya covers the true resplendent effulgent nature of the soul. The soul may seemingly be entrapped in Maya, but the soul does not lose its glory. Right? I was giving this example of gold that fell into some Suez canal. It does not lose its property, but it's covered for a while. Like that. Similarly, just like these 7,80,000 arrows were coming upon Dhruva and then completely drowning him, he's not visible only. Similarly, Maya also covers the soul, conditioned soul, and his true glory doesn't manifest. What is the true glory? His love and his service attitude towards Krishna. That doesn't manifest. So, without discrimination, the soul's love extends to everything and everyone. It sees everyone in relationship with Krishna. But when the consciousness is covered by Maya, that ability to love Krishna and everyone connected to Krishna is lost, is covered, is not manifest. Like that. His Holiness Raghunatha Swami Maharaj explains like this, in this context. So, and the demigods, all the siddhas who are watching from there, they really have good eyesight, right? Much better than ours. Although they were in the sky, they are able to see the whole scene. So they could actually see from the heavenly planets, but they could not see Dhruva. Although they have the ability to see everything that is happening here from such a distance, but they could not see Dhruva. They became anxious. What happened to Dhruva? Like that, they were lamenting. It's the consciousness development also. Means what you meant to ask? There is a gradation amongst all these species. On what basis? Yeah, depending on their powers and the development of their consciousness. The humans are not, they don't have so much of developed intelligence like demigods. They don't have so much of lifespan. The place where they live is not so exciting like the heavenly planets. So depending on their own previous background and karma, different people enter different species, and every species has certain facility. So 15th verse, right? 15th verse, all the yakshas proclaimed victory, but Dhruva re-emerged. Just like sun appears from foggy mist, nihara diva bhaskaraha. So sun, the fog seems to be covering the sun, but after a while, sun will just manifest and the fog has to dissipate, right? So similarly, the arrows were seemingly covering Dhruva, but suddenly Dhruva appeared in the midst of arrows. He could protect himself from all these arrows. He has such great fighting skills. So insignificant fog cannot cover the sun. So by comparing Dhruva with sun, his greatness is affirmed. So, in the 16th verse. In the 16th verse, Dhruva scattered the yakshas' weapons with his own arrows. So, as the wind scatters clouds in the sky, similarly, Dhruva is scattering all the weapons of yakshas that were coming upon him. Right? So, his twanging of bow created dismay amongst them. Right? Just the twanging of the bow was sufficient to cause terror in the hearts of yakshas. Now, 17th verse. Dhruva's sharp arrows pierced their bodies as thunderbolts pierce mountains. Now, earlier Dhruva was compared to a mountain and their arrows were compared to showers of rain. Now, they were compared to mountains, but Dhruva's arrows were compared to not showers of rain, but they were like thunderbolt. So, rains will clean the mountain, thunderbolt will destroy the mountain. So that's how the comparison is very significant. So Dhruva's arrows were like thunderbolts. Earlier the mountain of Dhruva was revitalized by Yakshas attack. Now the mountain of Yakshas are being killed by Dhruva's attack. So like that there were some interesting comparisons in this fight. Next, 18th and 19th verses. Can someone read?
The great sage Maitreya continued, "These ornaments lying on the battlefield were very attractive and could bewilder the mind of a hero."
So when the bodies of the soldiers were cut on the battlefield, the golden ornaments that they were wearing will be collected by the enemies. They'll just go and collect all the ornaments and then take to their own kingdom. So when you cut the body of an enemy, the bodily ornaments become your property. And body is left there. Like that. That will become the property of those yakshas. They have to burn it and then they have to do whatever they need to do. Next, 20th verse.
The remaining
yakshas are the associates of Kubera. And Kubera is a very wealthy person. So naturally they were wearing very costly ornaments. Yeah. Right. 20.
The remaining yakshas, who somehow or other were not killed, had their limbs cut to pieces by the arrows of great warrior Dhruva Maharaj. Thus they began to flee, just as elephants flee when defeated by a lion.
So the surviving yakshas began to flee. Sometimes when the fight is beyond the bandwidth of a warrior, he just chooses to leave, if he is not very valorous kshatriya. It's like in the fight between Vritrasura and the demons on his side and the demigods and Indra. So when there was a fight, the demigods were rejuvenated with new strength when they received the thunderbolt from the Dichi's bones. So at that time they were just releasing their weapons and demons became very fearful and they started running away from the battlefield. So Vritrasura said, "You are shameless. You should not be running away from the battlefield like this." So there are only two ways in which a kshatriya can leave this body to get a better destination. Number one, by performing devotional service and meditating on the Supreme Lord and then leaving the body. Number two, leaving the body on the battlefield. definitely you people will not meditate on the Supreme Lord and leave the body. Better you die on the battlefield only. But they are not listening. They are just running away. Although they were running away shamelessly, the demigods shamelessly were running behind them and then trying to kill them from behind. And Vritrasara turned towards the demigods and started chastising them also. So Vritrasara becomes a counselor for both the demons and the demigods and Indra also on the battlefield. No one was there on his side. But he is a self-appointed counselor of everybody, all parties. Very interesting, we'll discuss later. Next, 22nd verse.
In the meantime,
21st, right?
21st. Dhruva Maharaj, the best of human beings, observed that in that great battlefield, not one of the opposing soldiers were left standing with proper weapons. He then desired to see the city of Alkapuri, but he thought to himself, no one knows the plans of mystic Yakshas.
So Dhruva Maharaj is described as Manavottamaha in this context. So apparently all these Yakshas were running away from the battlefield. And Dhruva Maharaj, respecting the course of religious war, he did not run behind them to kill them. Definitely he was angry to kill them, but he wouldn't kill them when they were running away for their life. That's not proper for a Kshatriya. Mattam, pramattam, unmattam, shuptam, balam, striyam, jadam. So, someone who is intoxicated, someone who is mad, or a woman, or a child, or someone who is sleeping, someone who is not ready to fight, someone who does not have a chariot to fight, someone who does not have proper weapons to fight, like those people should be spared. You cannot attack them. These are the religious codes of war which Krishna taught to Arjuna in the context of Aswatthama. Aswatthama killed 5 sleeping sons of Draupadi. That's such a heinous act on the part of a warrior. They were sleeping and they were children and they were not willing to fight. They were not equipped with proper weapons. They don't have chariots at that time. And they were not on the battlefield also. How can he kill them? So he did not behave like a warrior. Better you kill him now only. So like that Krishna suggests Arjuna. So considering the religious codes of war, Dhruva did not attack the Yakshas. But he got a desire. So let me go and see Alakapuri. How is this? Right? Some sightseeing. But suddenly he got another thought. Apparently they were running away from the battlefield. But we don't know their plans. Suddenly they might attack later. Sometimes Maya seems to be settling down. Maya is not agitating me anymore. Right? Last 1 year, I didn't get any lusty thought. I didn't become angry. Or I didn't become victimized by any anartha. I didn't offend a devotee. I didn't criticize anyone. Looks like I am becoming a pure devotee. Looks like I am advancing spiritually more. So someone may think like that. A sadhaka might think like that sometimes. But Maya can attack at any time. So by practice of devotional service, by sincere practice, one may develop all good qualities. But Maya is expert enough to just take one good quality and probably attack us through that good quality also. Right? Maya is very expert. Bharat Maharaj did not have lust. He did not have anger. He did not have greed. He did not have any offensive or critical mentality towards anyone. But he has one good quality, compassion. So Maya attacked him through that compassion. And Maya made him a victim of that compassion, which is misplaced compassion upon an insignificant deer. So Prabhupada writes several times, yeah, it's fine to protect a deer when it is in predicament, but you cannot give so much of undue attention to that deer, so much so that you compromise on your own spiritual activities only. To be compassionate upon innocent animals, that's fine. But how much compassion? Compromising your own spiritual sadhana, and he was doing his rituals and then morning whatever oblations that he has to offer, meanwhile in the middle he will just go and then check. The deer is safe, he's playing nicely, fine. Sometimes the deer would come and contaminate the sacrificial ingredients. So Bhagavan, so like that he just chastises the deer, and the deer will go and sit there. But Bharat Maharaj is not honestly chastising. He is only getting attracted to the cuteness of the deer. people see how cute the deer looks. It's so nice. It has angry love. Now it went into Manlila. So like that he was imagining so much things. But he was distracted in his rituals. So it was not worth that Bharat Maharaj could spare so much of time and his energy on the deer, especially when he does not have an opportunity to bring the deer to Krishna consciousness. We can invest time on people to bring them to Krishna, but because the deer was an insignificant animal, ignorant animal, it was not possible to bring him to Krishna consciousness or make him chant Hare Krishna. Yes, Lord Chaitanya has done in Jharkhand forest, but not everyone can do it. So Bharat Maharaj should not have compromised on his spiritual sadhana. That's how Prabhupada says. Of course, there is a transcendental reason, and it is Krishna's plan that Bharat Maharaj's little inattentiveness at bhava stage made him an animal in the next life. But although he became an animal in the next life, he did not have animal consciousness. He had Bharat consciousness only. He had devotee consciousness only. So there are three Bharats: Bharat Maharaj, King Bharat, Deer Bharat, and Jada Bharat. So Deer Bharat is more spiritually advanced than King Bharat, although no one knows it. And Jada Bharat is more spiritually advanced than Deer Bharat. So from divine perspective, he is advancing only. But from human perspective and sadhaka point of view, he was distracted. So Maya could attack a devotee on the level of bhava also. Chitraketu had all great qualities, right? He got the darshan of Lord Sankarsana within 7 days, but he had a slight tinge of pride with which he thought that I can even give a feedback to Shiva also. So he went and commented on Shiva, and then Parvati cursed him to become a demon. So Maya can attack a devotee at any stage, right? So one needs to be careful. So Dhruva Maharaj is very careful here, that although yakshas were seemingly maintaining a low profile now, they were running away from me, but still they might attack me at any point, at any moment. So he was extremely careful. So 22nd verse. Dhruva was doubtful of counterattack from the mystic enemies. He was talking to his charioteer. Read the translation.
In the meantime, while Dhruva Maharaj, doubtful of his mystic enemies, was talking with his charioteer, they heard a tremendous sound as if the whole ocean were there, and they found that from the sky a great dust storm was coming over them from all directions.
Great storm was coming, dust storm from all directions. So Dhruva had said, one who does not know the plans of deluding enemy. Dhruva is described to be Chitraratha. So at this point Dhruva expected that there could be some unexpected attack from yakshas, but he does not exactly know how they are going to attack. Now they are not going to send weapons. They are not going to send 780,000 arrows now. They are going to create some mystic spells, magical spells. At first they had sent a dust storm. Read 23rd verse.
Within a moment, the whole sky was overcast with dense clouds and severe thundering was heard. There was glittering electric lightning and severe rainfall.
So there is lightning, there is rainfall. It's not monsoon also. But they have created that kind of mystic spell. When Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha was fighting with Varahadev also, Hiranyaksha created so many mystic spells to bewilder Varahadev, right? So here, yakshas were creating so many magical spells to bewilder Dhruva Maharaj. So there were clouds, thundering, lightning, severe rainfall, etc. So all these clouds are like various anarthas. Maya can create a mystic spell. First it will, Maya will make the sadhaka think that things are going on well. Right? You don't have to worry so much. And it creates the clouds of anarthas. And the anarthas may come back and attack us very vigorously. Right? The anartha that was seemingly settling down because of the practice over several years, may suddenly just pop up in the mind. That's why devotees do not trust the mind so much. So, in the 5th canto, 6th chapter, Rishabhadev's episode, Rishabhadev did not accept mystic powers. Why? So, at that time, Sukadeva Goswami mentions that devotees do not trust the mind. Their mind is like mind or maya. So, mind is like for example, sometimes a hunter may catch animals and put them in a net. Right? He uses his net to catch some animals. So, if he is not attentive to the captured animals, the captured animals might run away at any point. So, mind is also like that. A sadhaka might control his mind and then make the mind focus on Krishna. But if he doesn't carefully watch over the functions of the mind, doesn't attentively try to control the mind with conscious effort, continuous effort, mind will go away at any point. Or it's also compared like this. A low-born person, a degraded person, may be given nice training and he exhibits such great loyalty and character that at one point he may be even trusted to guard the treasure house also. Like that, someone will exhibit his good behavior. At some point, the thought of stealing may enter his mind and he may steal the treasure and then run away. Mind is like that. Mind is like such a low-born, degraded person. Apparently, it exhibits good behavior for a while, but after some time it may be degraded and then steal the treasure. Right? So, like that, mind is compared in various ways. So, one should not trust. So, in this context, acharyas give this kind of explanations. So, Dhruva did not trust the yakshas. Just like they are creating magic spells with so many clouds and thundering, etc. Maya also will bewilder the sadhakas by just suddenly just making them face the brunt of certain anartha very grossly. Right. 24th verse.
My dear friendless brother, in that rainfall there was blood, mucus, pus, stool, urine and marrow falling heavily before Dhruva Maharaj, and there were trunks of body falling from the sky.
Body trunks were falling from the sky. All this is illusion only. 25th verse.
Next, a great mountain was visible in the sky, and from all directions hailstones fell, along with the lances, clubs, swords, iron bludgeons, and great pieces of stone.
Next.
Dhruva Maharaj also saw many big serpents with angry eyes, vomiting forth fire and coming to devour him, along with the groups of mad elephants, lions and tigers.
So we see that painting, Dhruva Maharaj's painting, some snakes and tigers and lions and ferocious animals and rakshasas, they were all there surrounding Dhruva Maharaj. So all these things were surrounding Dhruva Maharaj and he has to alone fight with all of them. And 27th verse.
Then, as if it were the time of dissolution of the whole world, the fierce sea with foaming waves and great roaring sounds came forward before him.
Next.
The demon yakshas are by nature very heinous, and by their demonic power of illusion, they can create many strange phenomena to frighten one who is less intelligent.
The mystics who influence people with their mystic powers are like demons. So, in those days, yakshas might influence other people, or yakshas might bewilder other people with their spells. Now, 500 years back, in Mahaprabhu's time, there were some Bhattatharis who tried to bewilder the mind of this Krishnadas, Kala Krishnadas, right? So, that subtle technology of black art or some mystic spells or yogic powers were used to bewilder. But in the modern day, the sadhakas or general people in general are bewildered by advertisements, right? Internet, or whatever, smartphones or some new gadgets, updates. So there are different ways in which these mystic people will bewilder the minds of sadhakas or innocent people in general, right? So demons also may sometimes follow moral codes when everything is right. But when they are in difficulty, they don't hesitate to break all moral codes and take to illegal means. Similarly, businessmen of Kali Yuga, if they want profit, if they want to compete with their opposing whatever companies or brand, they don't hesitate to do anything. They don't mind showing something objectionable to attract people also. Oh, if I show my product in this manner, it might attract the people. Although there is nothing inside the product, right? So these are all like yakshas spells only, mystic spells only. The whole, most of the advertisements and advertising industry or movies or TVs or gadgets or all the other things. So they are there to bewilder and distract the sadhaka from his sadhana. So, 29th verse, read.
When the great sages heard that Dhruva Maharaj was overpowered by the illusory mystic tricks of the demons, they immediately assembled to offer him auspicious encouragement.
So when a sadhaka is in difficulty because of the bewilderments created by Maya, because of the mystic spells, because of this great mystic mountain created by the yakshas and stool and urine and blood pus and dead bodies and trunks and hands and legs, they were falling off. Tigers and snakes and elephants and ferocious animals were surrounding him. So in the midst of all of that, so sadhaka is also in the midst of all of that maya, right? So many spells created by the material energy of the Lord. So who will come to his rescue? Only devotees will come to rescue. Only Vaishnava Sangha will protect a struggling sadhaka from the attacks of Maya, which might come in various flavors. So sages came. So Dhruva Maharaj did not call for the sages. He did not seek the help of the sages. But sages heard that Dhruva was overpowered by illusory mystic tricks. They immediately assembled there to offer him encouragement, to invoke auspiciousness in his situation. So great sages are very compassionate and they voluntarily come to help, right? So Dhruva Maharaj just went to perform tapasya. He didn't know exactly what to do, but Narada Muni came and guided him. So similarly, In another incident where Dhruva Maharaj was in a predicament, sages were coming and guiding him. So for a sincere devotee, assistance from other devotees will automatically come. So, and we also should be willing to offer that kind of assistance to some devotee who may be in need of help. So from Dhruva Maharaj's perspective, we can understand that because he is a great devotee, other devotees came to his rescue and help voluntarily. And from sages' perspective also, we should need to take one important point that if someone else is in difficulty, if you notice that someone is in difficulty, so one can always voluntarily go and help him, or at least inspire someone else to help him. If it is not within one's bandwidth to help him, he can always direct that person to another person, or direct another person to this person to offer that help. Right? So Vaishnavas are there, Vaishnava Sangha is there to help each other. So sages came. 30th verse. Auttana pada bhagavam stava sandhanva deva shinotyavanatari avanatarti haro vipakshan yannamadheyam abhidhayani shamyachadda लोकोंजसातरति दुस्तरमंग मृत्युम्। Read the translation.
All the sages said, "Dear Dhruva, O son of King Uttanapad, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Saranga Dhanava, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, kill all your threatening enemies. The holy name of Lord is as powerful as Lord himself. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus a devotee is saved."
Uttanapada. Uttanapada means son of Uttanapada, Dhruva. Bhagavam stava sanga dhanva. All the sages were telling this Dhruva Maharaj. So may that Supreme Lord, called Sanga Dhanva, means his, the bow's name, the name of Lord's bow is called Sanga. So that's why he is called Saranga Dhanva. So may that Lord will protect you, relieve you from all distress. Devaha kshino tavatara avanata arti haro vipakshan. Arti hara, Krishna is known to be the vanquisher of all distresses. So may he kill all the distresses in your life. Kill, they may he kill your enemies, vipakshan. Yan namadheyam abhidaya nishamya chadha. Namadheyam, the holy name of the Lord, is so powerful that simply by chanting the holy name or hearing the holy name, which is as powerful as the Lord, full protection from fierce death is assured in the life of a devotee. Right? Loko anjasa tarati dustaram anga mrityam. Mrityam, the mrityu, is unsurpassable. No one can escape death. But anjasa tarati, one can easily cross over that mrityu also. If yan nama dheyam abhidaya, if one takes the holy name, if one hears the holy name, or if one chants the holy name, then one can easily cross over this fierce death, and devotee can be saved. So when maya attacks a devotee, a sadhaka, the Vaishnava Sangha will come to his rescue and protect him. And how do they protect him? By giving him holy name. By reminding him, you should chant the holy names of Krishna to protect yourself from this predicament. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, the sages thought that if one can cross the death by hearing about the Lord, then Dhruva could easily overcome Yaksha's magic spell. So, thus they made him remember the Narayana Astra, Narayana weapon. So, you invoke Narayana Astra by chanting the holy names of Narayana, then you can be protected from all these difficulties. Chanting Krishna's name brings a devotee into Krishna's association under his protection. What difficulty can befall one who is sheltered by Krishna? If only one can give that attention to the holy name, which is non-different from Krishna, that means he is with Krishna. He is in the association of Krishna. When someone is right next to Krishna, who has the daring to come and attack him? Yamadutas, when they went and challenged Yamaraj, we tried to capture Ajamil, he never came to protect us. We were defeated, we were humiliated, we were embarrassed, right? We were baffled in our attempt to capture Ajamil. So these four people, they came, they were so effulgent, they were looking so brilliant. They immediately came and rescued Narayana, they rescued Ajamil when he was chanting Narayana. So who is that? Then Yamaraj said, how dare you approach Ajamil? Right? The devotees of the Lord who chant the holy names are always protected by Lord's Kaumodaki Gada. So you should bring people who do not, who have not chanted the holy names, who have not offered obeisances to the Lord, who have not remembered the Lord at any time, but you cannot bring devotees. He says, Te deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha, e sadhavo samadrishah bhagavat prapannaha, tanno pasidata harer gadaya bhiguptan, naisham vayam nachavayah prabhavama dande. The devotees of the Lord are so glorious, but their deva siddha parigita pavitra gatha, their pure stories are sung by great siddhas and munis and devotees also. Yes, sadhavaha, they are sadhus. Samadrisha, they have the wealth of equanimity. Bhagavat prapanna, they are completely surrendered unto Vishnu. Right? Tan nopa siddhata, never try to approach such devotees. Harer gadaya viguptan, they are constantly protected by the kaumodaki gada of the Lord. Naisham vayaha nacha vayaha prabhavama bandhi. I have no ability to punish them. Time has no ability to punish them. Even Brahma has no ability to punish them. So, how can you, Yamadutas, try to capture them? Don't go there. So, when someone takes shelter of Krishna, it is Krishna's responsibility to protect them. And the best way to take shelter of Krishna is very fervently, helplessly, anxiously chanting His holy names. So, this simple fight scene of Dhruva can give so many lessons of sadhakas being entrapped in Maya's spell and devotees coming to his rescue and then protecting him and giving him holy name, taking shelter of the holy name. So the typical material shelters of family, intelligence, money, security, military, all other defense forces cannot protect one from these onslaughts of Maya. They only prove as substantial as clouds that can just go away from one place to another place. So they are not substantial shelters. At death, will our consciousness cling to a parting secret that we have neglected to communicate to a loved one? Or will we have become practiced enough to cling unflinchingly to Krishna's names? This statement is from Unveiling His Lotus Feet by Bhurijan Prabhu. So at the time of death, what do we remember? Do we remember one of the relatives or some other loved ones, or do we remember the holy names of Krishna? So that depends on our lifelong practice. So it's easier said than done. So one needs to consciously cultivate that dependence and that mood of dependence on Krishna's holy names, so that at the time of death one can remember Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. Although Bhishma has done so many things in his life, in his long life, he had the maturity and inside the inner strength to just withdraw all his senses from all activities and focus on Krishna at the time of death. Just a few minutes back, he spoke about Raja Dharma, Dana Dharma, Stri Dharma, Bhagavata Dharma, Varnashrama Dharma and many other dharmas to Yudhishthira Maharaj. He has such vast knowledge, but he knows the essential knowledge of focusing on Krishna also. He gave that knowledge to Rangasho. He spoke to Yudhishthira Maharaj and he withdrew all his senses and he focused only on his beloved form as Partha Sarathi and went back to Godhead, entering his Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So, one needs to train oneself while living in this world so that he can leave this world in an ideal way. So, art of living depends on art of living in this world. If one leads a responsible life centered around virtuous principles and God consciousness and chanting the holy names of the Lord, living becomes easy and glorious. But if the living is centered around some material attachments, living will take us, direct us to another life where we have to live with those material attachments in a different setup, like that. So the difficulties that we face are the tests that allow us to access our own consciousness. When there is a difficulty, let me just check within, right? So each day we see ourselves seeking shelter whenever we face trouble or perplexity or hardship. So these tests show where we perceive our shelter to be, while simultaneously suggesting whether we need to take remedial measures in our spiritual life. So it means that when a calamity comes, where do I seek shelter? For example, Pururava's case is there. So, his case is a love failure case. He wanted the association of Urvasi and he did not get enough association. Someone who is in mode of ignorance, when he fails in his love, he takes a bottle. Right? Someone who is in mode of passion, when he fails in his love, he will aggressively enjoy. With some other place that he will present his passion and aggressiveness in some other form. Someone who is in mode of goodness, when he fails in his love, he cultivates detachment. And someone who is beyond modes, if he fails in his attempts to love a material object, he takes to devotional service. So ultimately Pururava went to devotional service. That's why we discussed that story in Bhagavatam. So all love failure cases will not appear in Bhagavatam. Only Pururava's case or ARD's case or last episode will not appear in Bhagavatam. Right? So such people who have taken shelter of Krishna in the midst of calamity, those people's stories are worth reading, worth taking inspiration from. So many calamities all these people, Pandavas, experienced. And we don't discuss the stories of so many such people. But why Pandavas are special? Because they have taken shelter of Krishna. Snigdheshu Pandushu Jagat Pranatim Cha Vishnu Bhaktim Karoti Nrupatis Charanaravinde. In the midst of all those calamities, they have been malleable to the will of Krishna. And Kunti is praying for more calamities. Let there be more calamities in our life. Let my son be poisoned again. Let our house be burnt again. Let my daughter-in-law be disrobed again. We don't mind. As long as we have the opportunity to take shelter of your lotus feet. Right? Vipada santuta shashvat. Let there be shashvat. Vipada. Let there be vipada santata shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yasyad apunar bhava darshanam. We may not pray for calamities imitating Kunti Maharani, but at least whatever calamities come of their own accord, we will try to imbibe that consciousness of dependence on Krishna and not depending on some material shelter. Right? As I said, someone who is in mode of ignorance, he will take some other shelter when he fails. Someone who is in passion, he will take some other shelter when he experiences a failure. But someone who is who has wisdom, who has good training, he will take shelter of Krishna when he experiences some calamities in life. So all the calamities are there as uddirvan for us to take shelter of Krishna's holy names. So someone who can perceive misery as mercy of Krishna and depend on Krishna in the midst of that misery is someone who has internalized the principles of devotional service. If someone is seeking some other shelter other than Krishna, then he has a long way to go. Right? So Prabhupada writes, a devotee is always protected with the Supreme Lord. By his inspiration only, sages come to encourage Dhruva when his mind was perplexed due to the magical feats of Yakshas and assure him that there was no danger because he was a soul fully surrendered unto Krishna. We may have taken shelter of Krishna, we may have taken to the path of devotional service, but when a perplexity comes in front of us, we may not be able to remember that I am a devotee, I have a shelter. So Krishna is there to protect me. We may even forget that also. Right? A devotee has to come and remind. Now we should chant Hare Krishna. Right? So the intensity of perplexity makes us so bewildered that although we know the solution, we may not be able to apply the solution. Someone has to come and remind us this is the solution. For example, somebody who is writing an exam, so he may forget the formula. That he knows the problem, he has prepared very well, so he may forget the formula while he is doing his project work or some experiment in the lab. If someone comes and reminds him, then oh, this is what I need to do. So it's not like a closed book test where you are writing on your own, right? So it's like open book test where so many devotees are there to come to our rescue and remind us, I think you should take shelter. So that's why we should be in the midst of association of devotees. But closed book tests you write like that only in a regular format. Don't make closed book tests into open book tests. But it's we need to take advantage and benefit of the association of devotees. So by Lord's grace, if a devotee at the time of death can simply chant Hare Krishna, he immediately surpasses the great ocean of material sky and enters the spiritual sky and never has to come back to this material world for repeated birth and death. So it is in our real true self-interest to become deeply attached to and sheltered by Krishna. This is more important than cultivating detachment from matter. Yes, we need to cultivate detachment from matter, but more important than that is cultivating attachment to Krishna. So when attachment to Krishna develops, detachment from matter automatically develops. A jnani is a person, an impersonalist is a person who focuses most of his energy in cultivating detachment only from matter. But there is no positive attachment towards a spiritual goal. So a devotee is one who cultivates attachment while simultaneously cultivating detachment from the material world also, but giving more priority to that attachment to Krishna factor. Right? So we need to go to the positive, not just come to the zero level. So if one comes from negative to zero, he cannot stay in zero for longer time. He may just again go back to negative also. Right? Unless he has something positive to look at. So if the zero is your ultimate goal, going from negative to zero is your ultimate goal, then that's like a jnani path, right? Impersonalistic path. But going to the positive is the ultimate goal, then that is bhakta path. So thus Krishna kindly sent all these sages to Dhruva Maharaj when he needed their guidance the most. And so that is the gift of Vaishnava Sangha, which is the central method of offering Krishna's mercy in this world. So Krishna's mercy descends through the Sangha of Vaishnavas in our life. So we need to take shelter of the Vaishnavas. And the chanting of the holy names of the Narayana here, Narayanastra, so that dispel the illusions that were created by the Rakshas very miraculously. So it's very symbolic. In the material world also, from within and without, we are always in situations where we are attacked in so many ways by opposing forces of Maya that appear impossible to overcome. Our material desires due to uncontrolled mind are like so many tigers, lions, venomous snakes, and all these urine stulpas that is falling from the mountain, all these are compared to our material desires. When we are in the midst of all the material desires, entrapped by all of them, the only way to come out is by chanting the holy names, by taking assistance of Vaishnava Sangha. Sometimes the thoughts in our mind become so abominable than blood and pus and stool and urine that is coming from this mystical mountain. Right? So they are pouring upon us, and sometimes the tendencies of lust, envy, greed, pride, anger, etc., they appear to overcome us like tidal waves of a great ocean. All these yakshas have created an ocean also. Right? So all our material desires and anarthas are compared to all the magical spells created by all these yakshas. So, and we are little sadhakas, devotees trying to be pure, trying to serve, and we are attacked by Maya in such a ferocious way. So if one does not take shelter of Vaishnava Sangha and the holy name, so one may be drowned in this ocean. One may be crushed under that mountain. Right? So Maya is she who gives all power to the yakshas within our own hearts. These yakshas are not outside. In Dhruva's case, yakshas are the opposite party. They are sending all these mystic spells. But in a sadhaka's case, yakshas are within the heart, creating all the anarthas and the material desires and inclinations to enjoy and uddipan to criticize and offend and do some abominable activities. Right? So we are practically standing on the battlefields like Dhruva Maharaj, with all these illusions just coming upon us, and we are thoroughly helpless. In such helpless situation, when one gets bewildered, then he needs association of devotees. Right? Actually, Krishna's devotee takes shelter of the holy name, and then the illusions are destroyed. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Haya Andhakar. When Krishna descends in the life of a sadhaka in the form of the holy name, the andhakar, the maya, or the magic spells created by yakshas and the representatives of maya will just run away. Like that. So, that's how this whole Dhruva Maharaj's fighting episode is very symbolic, giving us so many lessons and insights on how a sadhaka struggles in his practice of devotional service and how he can be protected by taking shelter of the holy names of Krishna and by taking shelter of the association of devotees. Thank you all very much. Granthashrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.